The views and opinions expressed in the following paid pre-recorded program are those of the host, callers, and guests and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of the station, its management, or its owners.
Securities offered through Kestra Investment Services, LLC. Kestra IS, member FINRA SIPC. Investment advisory services offered through Kestra Advisory Services, LLC. Kestra AS, an affiliate of Kestra IS. Capital Advisory Group, Inc. is not affiliated with Kestra IS or Kestra AS. Neither Kestra IS nor Kestra AS provide legal or tax advice and are not certified public accounting firms.
You work hard for your money. For the next hour, you're going to learn how to keep what's yours. Capital Advisory Group presents Keep What's Yours. Here are Josh Gilbert and Jeff Zufall.
Welcome to Keep What's Yours with Jeff Zufall. My name is Josh Gilbert, sitting here with Jeff Zufall, Senior Tax Strategist and Wealth Advisor with Capital Advisory Group. And tax deadline day is here, and Jeff is calling in from a bunker somewhere out west. Hiding from everybody just to make sure that everything gets done on time. The T's are dotted, the I's are crossed, all that stuff. Jeff, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Are we gonna make it through?
We're gonna make it. We're pushing right up to the deadline, but we are gonna make it, most definitely.
And as always, you know, we always remind people, even if you got an extension, you still have to pay something to the government.
So an extension is strictly to process paperwork. So what we do is, if we file an extension for somebody, we usually reach out to them, unless you get a refund. If you've consistently gotten a refund in the past, we don't get too excited about it. But anybody that's borderline, we do a quick calculation and we have you pay something, along with the tax return. along with the extension, to make sure that you don't get hit with an underpayment penalty at a later date.
So you gotta pay something. And yes. What do you pay? Well, I haven't finished my taxes. How do I know what to pay? Well, just pay them what you paid them last year, and that'll keep them at bay. And then
when
you finish the paperwork, you finalize everything, maybe you get a little bit more back, maybe you owe a little bit more than you thought, then you start evening out at that point. But you don't want to just pay nothing thinking that you got an extension, because fees, penalties, taxes upon tax. Hey, look, if I didn't like paying the tax at first, why would I want to pay even more tax on top of that? So
exactly. And then, again, you got to remember, since the Fed has raised interest rates over the last couple of years and they've gone through the roof, the interest rate penalty that you pay to owe the IRS money has skyrocketed, and it's sitting at about 8% a quarter. So it's not a cheap feat, in a sense, to owe them money. So you want to make sure you get something paid in, or the bulk of it. Within $1,000 is typically the target that you're shooting for. And that way there's no underpayment penalties.
Right. And like you said, in years past, it has been 3-4% as kind of a ding you for not paying your taxes.
Yeah.
But now it's at 8%. So no matter what, you know, no matter what, you want to pay it. But now it's even higher than ever. So
exactly.
Let's talk about on the show today, going forward. Now that everything is done, and I think for the most part, tax day is, you know, April 15th. For the most part, everybody should be done and through this by now, whether they got an extension or not. They paid their taxes. They paid their estimated taxes. What should we do going forward? What can I do starting, you know, April 16th, the next couple of weeks, to get me in a better position for next year's tax time? So we'll do that. We'll talk CPI numbers. Consumer price index numbers are out. Will we be getting a Fed rate cut? Will we be getting a rate hike? We'll talk about that as well. But first, Jeff, I want to ask you, now that tax deadline is here, who actually pays the most taxes? You know, we always talk about the 1% out there who have the bulk of the money, but that leaves 99% of the rest of us paying something. Who's actually paying the most in taxes when it comes down to crunch time?
Exactly. So this was a a poll done by CBS News, and what they're saying is most Americans think that they pay way too much in federal income taxes, okay? And they're saying 6 of 10 believe that the middle-income households carry the highest tax burden, which isn't really true. And so basically, about 18% of America identified the group that pays the most in taxes. And so basically, these are numbers coming off of the 2021, you know, which is the most current data that they have, 2021 tax season. So you filed your 2021 tax return in 2022. The average earner, okay, so this is kind of funny, paid $14,279 in federal income tax, okay, with an average tax rate, and this is effective tax rate, of 14.9%, okay? And you go, wow, that's a lot of money, okay? But basically the top 50% of earners, okay, pay almost 98% of the taxes that are paid out there. And the bottom 50% basically that make below, and here's the funny number, below $46,637 annually account for 2.3% of the country's tax receipts. So basically what it's saying is the top 50% of earners contribute almost all the 98% of the taxes that are paid into the system.
And that's because the low wage earners, the low, you know, you make $46,000 or less a year, you're not paying a lot in taxes, or you may even be getting a refund.
Exactly. So that's where they're kind of going down that path. Now, here's where the flip is. You say, all right, well, that 50%, they don't pay in that much to the system. But if you have a lower income, you are paying a higher effective sales tax rate when you're out buying stuff, you know, daily. So literally the twist on that is, yes, they don't pay, how would you say it, the highest tax rate if you're in that lower income earner, but you are getting, I'd say, abused, if you want to call it, because you're paying a higher percentage of your income just strictly like in sales tax. Just going to the grocery store, paying a sales tax, you know, anything like that as you go forward. So
we all make different wages out there, from the lowest to the top, but we all pay the same for a taco. We all pay the same for our groceries. We all pay the same for car insurance or whatever. So if you're making a low wage and the sales taxes are what they are, you're going to be hit harder, you know, more of, I can absorb this a little bit easier because, you know, I make a little bit more money. But for someone making low wages, that, you know, 8-9% sales tax, that's real deal.
It's the real deal, exactly. And it's taking more money out of the pockets or their pockets as we go forward. Whereas someone with, I'll say, you know, some wealth behind them, they could afford to pay that. And it's really not that big of a deal.
You know, Warren Buffett always says that his favorite restaurant is Burger King. I don't know if he says that because he owns a big chunk of Burger
stock.
King. Yeah, the Burger King stock. But, you know, you see him on with Jane Pauley and they're at the Burger King eating an egg sandwich. He pays the same amount at Burger King as the people behind the counter, or,
exactly,
you know, the single parent that pulls up and wants to feed their kids. And those prices are getting pretty high, Jeff.
Yes, that they are.
Yeah. So that's interesting. The top 50% of earners pay 98% of the tax. And that's just the way that this functionally works out. For the average worker in the United States, this means taking an average of the billionaires versus the lowest income workers that probably don't really pay that much tax at all. The average worker person in the United States pays $14,000 in tax.
Yes. The average, and that's the average, is $14,279 in federal tax. And then it goes a little bit deeper into it, and it says if you, and this is what's funny, if you have annual income of $169,800, you pay almost 75% of the nation's tax bill.
Hmm.
So the people of 169, which is the top 10%, and we got into this, I guess, a couple of shows ago, where we were doing, you know, what's it take to be in the top 1% nationally, and what's it take for the state of Missouri, and so on. But this is just saying top 10% is 169.8 pays 75% or three-quarters of all the nation's tax bill.
How about that? And that's doable, Jeff. That,
yeah.
You know, a dual-income household, that's...
Oh, easy.
Yeah, that's pretty doable these days to get up to that point. So, you know, it's interesting. It's interesting. I'm not going to get too deep into my own personal finances, but I might be telling people, hey, you know, I'm close to the top 10%.
That's right.
So, well, that's interesting. But, you know, there's a lot of people in the rest of the 90% down there.
Exactly.
So that's, you know, that's almost kind of stunning to look at. And I wonder if that's what it's like in other countries, if that's just what it's like here in America. You mentioned 2021 tax season. That's where these numbers come from. That was in the thick of COVID. Now,
yeah, that's in very thick of COVID, yes.
Are we going to look back as historians 20 years from now and say, hey, those COVID years, we can't trust those tax numbers because that was COVID years? Or were we all still working? We were all still making a paycheck. We were all still paying taxes, paying sales tax. Is it really going to just look like every other year?
I think it may be asterisked just a little bit, because that would have 21 would have been the, I'll say, the heart of COVID. So then you say, how many people got laid off? You know, how many people had to revamp their entire life and start working from home, which is now mainstream, you know, where people were accustomed to going in the office every day. I mean, we through COVID, literally when I left my subdivision, it was actually scary. It was very scary, just strictly because when you would leave, there'd be no traffic anywhere. Everybody was working from home. So, again, that's the question. It could have an asterisk on it as saying, hey, these are COVID years. We're not sure.
Yeah. And I wonder, you know, these numbers that you threw out there, do you think that these averages of who the top 50, who the bottom 50, who the top 10% is, do you think that was affected by COVID, or that's probably pretty solid?
I think those are probably solid numbers as they go forward, because those incomes are still going to kind of fluctuate as we go forward. You know what I mean? Where they still stay, can't talk, still stay in the same scenario. So, yeah.
Yep. All right. Well, the average worker pays $14,000 in taxes, a 14.9% effective tax rate. And Jeff, you know, tax season is winding down. We are going to schedule a sit down, just you and me and my wife, you know, because I am a client, full disclosure, of Capital Advisory Group. I am a client. We're going to sit down and I'm going to look at it and say, hey, Jeff, how much did I pay in taxes? And it's all right there. We'll break it down. We'll talk about it. And one of the beautiful things of being a client of Capital Advisory Group, of Jeff Zufall, is that you get to sit down at the end of tax season when all the dust settles and just say, what happened last year? How can we make it better? How much did I pay in taxes? How much could I have kept in my pocket just by doing an FSA or an HSA or starting a savings plan for my son's college? Or one of these other things that you've got in your whole arsenal, Jeff. That's the beauty of Jeff Zufall. He knows the tax code. There's a whole list of things that you can do to minimize your tax bill and set yourself up for paying less in taxes and saving more for college and retirement. When I get to sit down with Jeff, we'll go over all of this stuff. And frankly, in the next segment, we'll kind of give you a peek of what we'll talk about coming up. In the next segment, now that tax season is over, what's done is done. What can we do for the next 9 months or so to make sure that next tax season is less stressful, more lucrative for us? We keep more money in our pockets, less going out to the government. We're going to talk. What do we do going forward now? Have a sit down with Jeff Zufall and have that conversation. 636-394-5524, CapitalAdvisoryGRP.com is the website. Jeff Zufall is the senior tax strategist and wealth advisor with Capital Advisory Group, and he can help you keep more of your money. Did you have a problem during this tax season? Did you think you were paying more? Did you think that, you know, maybe I was in the wrong tax bracket, or maybe my withholdings were off? We'll talk in the next segment about what you can do going forward to make sure that that tax hit is minimized, and maybe, just maybe, you'll get a refund next year. Jeff, hang tight. We will be back right after this.
Keep What's Yours continues with Josh Gilbert and Jeff Zufall.
Back on the show, back to Keep What's Yours with Jeff Zufall. Tax season is done. It's in the books. You know, you might have an extension out there. You got to pay something to the government and finish your paperwork and figure it out then. But you got to pay them something now or else the fees will start. We talked about that. But what to do now? Now that I have all my forms and my paperwork, I know what I made, I know what I paid, and I know that I've got some other stuff that maybe I could do. Because Jeff, you know, I listen to the show and I hear the hosts always talk about, you know, FSAs and HSAs and where we can keep some of our money and where we could save more in our taxes. But how do I take advantage of that stuff? Well, first and foremost, you go see Jeff Zufall at Capital Advisory Group, 636-394-5524. Have a sit down and say, this is my life on paper. What can we do? But what are some of those things? Let's give them some hints, Jeff. What are some of those things, first things that we can do going forward to maybe make next year's tax burden a little less?
So let's say that one of the big things we see is, let's say a spouse passed away, and you were basically claiming, you know, married filing jointly. Now you have to fall back to single. It's a huge gap, you know, so that's something that you need to be prepared for. The other thing, and this is a sneaky one out there, anybody that has 16-year-old children, what'll take place is with the child tax credit, you are currently getting a $2,000 credit for the children, okay? So, but if they turn age 17 in the tax year, it falls to $500. And that's a sneaky one because nobody pays attention to it, figuring, hey, you know, we get this exemption up until maybe, you know, in their 20s. But the problem is that actually kicks in at age 17 or older. So if they're 16 or soon to be 17, your deduction or your exemption went from $2,000 to $500. And it's huge. So especially if you have twins. So that was one that snuck up on somebody this year. But that's the stuff that's hiding in the tax law. And there's nothing you can really do about that other than you step in and adjust your withholdings. And it may be a combination of adjust your withholdings, increase your contributions to, you know, a 401k, an HSA, you know, MSA, anything that you could get to pre-tax, pay yourself first is what you're trying to do. So again, it's a matter of, we see this where we're basically the returns we've done over the last couple of months, we are literally, and I say this honestly, we are recording history is what we're doing. Every once in a while, there's a couple things we can do, you know, to help out to reduce the taxes, but typically we're recording history. Now, if we would have planned correctly, we didn't have to worry about that kind of stuff going forward. But again, that is the big picture, and that's really what you need to be focused on now and going forward, is what does 2024 look like? You know, are you going to make more, make less? And maybe estimated payments come into the picture. And I say estimated payments, nobody likes doing that. That seems like extra tax that you're paying. But really, that's a way that you can make quarterly payments to help lower your tax bill when the tax return is due, which would be next year.
Now, let me stop you there. This makes me nervous because as someone that used to work in some industries where maybe I was supposed to be making estimated payments or, you know, driving Uber, doing contract work. There's a lot of industries out there that make really good money that are supposed to be making estimated payments every quarter. When I go to do my taxes every year, I come to you in February, March, and we do the taxes and we're done with it. When I work contract and maybe I need to make estimated payments every quarter, do I have to come to you every quarter to figure out what I owe?
No, what we do, and if your income is variable where you're on or off month to month and it's big dollars, we kind of keep a rolling tab on it as we go forward. But the normal person, what we do is we go in there and we back into the number. So when we do your tax return this year, we back into a number and it will actually take what your previous year's tax liability was and it will typically inflate it at 10%. So what it's trying to do is pick up for, you know, I'll say inflation going forward, wage increases, and what it does is it will actually just project out for the year and it will give you 4 installments. You can make them all at one time if you'd like. You just can't miss installments as you go forward. So they're April 15th, so literally 2 days. and then it goes June 15th, September 15th, and then it's weird because then it goes January 15th of next year, which is the final payment for this year. So you could write one check in April, call it a day. You could stretch it out over the 4 estimated payments, but you're just trying to make sure by the end of the year you pay in your previous year's tax liability. That way they can't, because if you owe more than $1,000, the IRS will actually impose a underpayment penalty, and that's when the fees and interest come into play.
And when you're a contract worker or you're a DoorDasher or one of these industries, when you get paid, is your tax line blank? Are they not taking taxes out of that?
Well, you get paid by a different, what most people are accustomed to their W-2. It automatically takes into consideration, you know, your federal tax, your state tax, typically. It's paying your Social Security tax and your Medicare tax are all kind of buried in all those, you know, jumbled numbers that you see on your paycheck stubs. If you are a subcontractor, it's just one line item. If the boom, here's your money, have a nice day. It's up to that individual then to say, hey, I have, you know, income, I have expenses, and then you can go back in and say, am I profitable or not? But you, as the individual, when you're paid that way, whether it's 1099, it was called NEC, which is non-employee compensation, or miscellaneous, you are then on the hook for those taxes. Mm. And so the taxes, big picture, are this: federal tax, state tax, if you live in a state that has taxes, and then within your self-employment tax, whether people realize this or not, within their paycheck, if you really look at it, 6.2% of your income goes to Social Security, and that, as the employee, you pay that out. And 1.45% of your income goes to Medicare. Your employer matches that dollar for dollar every time that you get paid. And then you have federal tax and state tax, like I was saying. So basically the big picture, if you are a subcontractor, you are the employee / employer. So you're literally paying 15.3%. You're paying both sides of that to Medicare and to Social Security. So it gets, the self-employment tax usually sneaks up on people and they don't realize that they're on the hook for it, basically.
Yeah. And this is something that you want to keep in mind if you are one of these employees and maybe you're new to it. You want to do this every quarter estimated because that's what the government wants you to do. But you want to do this because come the end of the year, you don't want to be like, well, I made all this money and then realize, oh, I never paid any taxes on it.
And, exactly.
And as a non-company employee, your employer wasn't matching that. So now instead of owing 6.2 for Social Security, you own double that because you gotta pay the employer side and the employee side. So I can see why you would want to stay on top of this, Jeff, because at the end of the year, how many times have you had somebody come in and say, I didn't pay anything last year?
A bunch.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they probably got a real smack in the face.
Oh, yeah, and then that's where the penalties and the interest start to compile on you, and then it just gets out of control quickly. So again, that's you just if you're I said in the gig economy, just make sure that you're paying something into the system as you go forward. And again, look at it this way: you're cheating yourself because as if you have a day job and you have that that W-2 in a sense, you're paying into your Social Security and your Medicare. If you are self-employed, that self-employment tax that you pay, that is your Social Security and your Medicare that you're paying in. So we see some people say, hey, I'm never going to pay in taxes. I'm going to, I'm going to take a loss every year. The problem is you're not paying into the system. So at the end of the day, you could cheat yourself. I mean, there's a good part, the tax planning and tax strategy, and there's a bad part of it. And the bad part is if you actually got it to zero, you're not paying into the system, which means your Social Security is going to be lower than what it would be if you were paying into that system for years.
And that's part of that pay yourself first idea.
Exactly.
We'll go back to that in just a second. But I want to remind everybody from the last segment, 2021 tax season, the average American worker paid $14,000 in taxes for 2021. If you are a gig economy employee and every paycheck you get doesn't have taxes taken out, can you afford $14,000 next April? I'm going to go ahead and say, Jeff, not a lot of people can.
Yeah, and that's what gets people into trouble. Exactly.
Yep. So going back to pay yourself first, I'm sitting here and I'll use my example, but taxes are what they are. And, I get paid and they take the Fed and the state out and they take my Social Security, Medicare. Great. That's fine. But when I go and look at the rest of the landscape of what I have, a mortgage, some car payments, we've got daycare for my son. Maybe we have some medical bills. There are ways to sock money away from my paycheck to pay those other things like daycare and healthcare costs that could be tax-free or tax beneficial to me, right?
Yeah, and there's a lot of programs that are pre-tax that will save taxation today, defer it, for a later date in a sense, but at least reduce it as you sit today, and that's the biggest concept that you're trying to do. Even a 401k, the concept on a 401k, and it works for some people and some people it doesn't, that you would be working at, say your late, 50s, your highest earning potential in a sense. So you may be making big bucks and at a 24% tax bracket, and you would be putting that money away pre-tax to then retire, and hypothetically, in a perfect world, you would retire and go to a 12% tax bracket. So literally you're saving an effective 50% taxes on that money as you go forward. And again, that's in a perfect world. Everybody's a little different as you go. But that is the theory why you'd like to pay yourself first. And then that way, yes, you're going to pay tax on it at a later date. Don't get me wrong. You're never going to get out of the taxation on it. But the concept on that is that you reduce the tax today. The money goes into an account, it grows tax deferred, which means you've just put off the taxation to a later date, but it now can grow compounding with no taxation on it and then be taken out at a later date.
And a lot of times, we look at our finances and say, what do I need to survive? What the growing grocery costs is X. My mortgage is Y. The car payments, this or that. How much is left over? Maybe sock some money away in case, the heat comes and I turn on my AC and it doesn't work anymore. So have some safe money off to the side. What's left? What's left over? And how much do I have to play with there? Because that money that's left over, that could go towards a retirement, that can go towards a savings account for college, all that money can be invested or taken out of my paycheck in a very tax beneficial way to me. So a lot of times when you're saying, well, you know, paying my federal tax, it is what it is. But with all that money that's left over that you don't have earmarked for anything, what could you be doing with that could bring you a lower tax rate?
Yeah. I mean, and one thing that a lot of people, high income earners, I'll say avoid, if you want to call it, or forget about, is basically what's called a backdoor Roth, which means you could do a non-deductible IRA account. You don't get a tax break for it, but it's a non-deductible contribution, and then you convert that exact amount to a Roth IRA. And it's a non-taxable event, but it's a way for somebody who makes too much money who cannot contribute to a Roth to get the money in there.
And just with my personal situation, I mention it all the time, but for the schooling, we have that taken out of my wife's paycheck. It's FSA, and we're literally saving, you know, $2,400 a year just doing that.
Exactly.
That's real cash that's kept in my pocket, kept in our bank accounts, and can be used for, you know, groceries, but can be used for vacations or, you know, upgrades to the house or whatever. So this is real money, and that's not even an example of if I play my cards right 30 years down the road, I can find myself having saved a bunch of taxes. This is real world tax saving every year that we go forward.
Yes.
So there's
exactly.
There's a lot of that stuff out there, and we want to make sure that we're sitting down with Jeff, going over it, saying, hey, what did we, and you know what? And this is what's going to happen when I sit down with you in the coming weeks. I'm going to say, Jeff, we took your advice from last year. We did a good job. We kept a lot of our money. We put ourselves into a better situation when it comes to retirement. But what more can we be doing going forward? You know, it's like just because you did something last year doesn't mean that you can't find something else to do this year or next year.
This year. Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And,
so,
and I mean, one's adding, you know, adding 1% to your 401k. It's out of sight, out of mind. It'll help you as you go forward. So
the first thing I'm going to do when I walk into your office is I'm going to say, what's next? Because, you know, we did whatever we did last year. Now I want to save a little bit more, keep a little bit more of what's mine. So let's go back over it again. Grocery list of what to do going forward when it comes for 2024 tax season, which would be next year. What can I do for the next 9 months to make myself in a better tax situation come next year? Did your spouse pass away? You need to keep in mind that now you're filing single. Do you have 16-year-old children that were going to turn 17 this year? That's a big deal. That's going to be a hit. That's going to blindside you. Yeah. I love the fact that you brought up twins. Or do you have 16-year-old twins turning 17 this year? That's a double whammy. One of the biggest ones, adjust your withholdings. Just take a look and see, am I paying enough every 2 weeks on my paycheck or however often we get paid? Am I paying enough into state and federal and Social Security to make sure that at the end of the year, the government doesn't say, well, you weren't paying enough per paycheck. So, you know, here's your bill. Make sure that you're paying enough so that you don't get a surprise tax bill at the end, and then figure out what more you can be doing with the money that's left over. Extra 1% to your 401k. Do you want to start an HSA, a health savings account? Do you want to start a flex spending account? Do you want to save more for college? There's so many different things that you can do. And if your kids don't go to college, well, all that money I saved up, it gave me a big tax benefit. How do I how do I reuse that money without taking a tax hit on it? So many different things that you can do that you can talk to Jeff about. And that number to call is 636-394-5524. Capital Advisory Group, capitaladvisorygrp.com. 636-394-5524. Tax season is done this year. We're done. But
almost.
But there's another tax season coming up. So let's reposition ourselves to have a better tax year than we did last year. Even if you say, you know, I had a really good tax year this year. Well, there's probably something you can do to make it even better going forward. So give Jeff a call, 636-394-5524. Coming up next, Consumer Price Index. Will there be a rate hike? Will there be a rate drop before the end of the year? We'll talk to Jeff about that coming up. It's Keep What's Yours with Jeff Zufall on the Big 550.
Keep What's Yours continues with Josh Gilbert and Jeff Zufall.
Back on the show, back to Keep What's Yours with Jeff Zufall. Jeff is a kind of in absentia right now. He is finalizing everyone's taxes going forward. And Jeff, I just got to ask you, joining us by phone from a bunker somewhere, surrounded by papers and an endless supply of Capital Advisory Group pens. Was this tax season any worse, any better, any different than previous tax seasons?
It was the same. It wasn't crazy. There's really no, I say, new laws that were tossed out there. I mean, there was right at the end, the enhanced child tax credit package came out, but it wasn't detrimental where you had to backtrack. I mean, there's been years where they've changed tax law in mid-January, maybe even up to February. And you literally had to go back and amend tax returns that you've already done because they changed the law. Like the one back in the COVID days was the first $10,000 of unemployment was non-taxable to people. We had already filed a couple hundred tax returns. And then the IRS said, no, we'll take care of that. Don't amend them, which was a scary part.
Yeah.
They did, but in their good time. So,
and I always thought that was weird that unemployment, which comes from the state, or does it come from the state or the feds?
It actually comes from the state.
Comes from the state, and they give it to you, and then you have to pay them taxes on it. And it's like, why don't they just take the taxes income up before they give it to me?
Well, yeah, it's income, so that's, you pay tax on everything.
So. Yep. So we look at the news, the landscape, and we've been following the inflation numbers, and they've been ticking down pretty steadily since the peak of the pandemic. But what did we see just this past week?
So the CPI numbers came out, and the what's called the year-over-year increase was 3.5%, which was, they were expecting 3.4, but still, those are big numbers that are coming out. So if you really look at it, the core CPI, so this is the funny part, is it's all items less food and energy. So if you take out the two things that you need daily, it's trying to normalize or levelize those numbers as you go forward. And if you really add it in, you know, food and oil, it's probably going to make it skyrocket. But they've done that since the mid-80s where they adjusted the factor. But what that's basically saying is inflation is still here. And it's not taken care of. It just didn't disappear. So the kind of the concept was there were talks in November and December of last year and even in the January of this year that there would be at least, you know, 3 to 4 different rate cuts this year, which most of that has now been taken off the table. If anything, it's possibly later this year, like late this year, if anything. And the possibility actually exists that maybe they have to increase rates. And again, they increase interest rates to slow the economy down to help, starve off inflation. And you decrease interest rates to spark the economy to get the wheels in motion. But the whole time, you have to watch out for where is inflation within the economy as we go. So that's, we're kind of in that catch-22. Which says, hey, maybe, you know, then I think the market was based, a lot of the run-up in the market was based upon rate cuts that everybody was planning on, you know, that were going to be coming down the pike, which they're not now, or at least for the near future.
So I always ask you, and I'm needed to be reminded every time, I'm like, consumer price index, it's up higher. They wanted it to be lower, but it's not. And I'm always like, well, you know, you go to the grocery store and everything seems to be more expensive every time you go. And wrong, consumer price index does not take into account food and energy like gas.
Exactly.
And I understand gas not being taken into account there because gas fluctuates wildly for any unknown reasons. Who knows? You know,
exactly. The wind blows too hard in the Gulf of Mexico and you know, gas prices go up.
Yeah. Just talk to OPEC and ask them why gas prices fluctuate wildly. And they won't even give you a straight answer. But I understand gas not being in there. But food is something that should be pretty stable or whatever. But it's not. At least not these days, and it's not included. So consumer price index being up, what are these things? Is this mattresses and DVD player? Who has a DVD player anymore?
But it's a basket of goods that we buy on a daily basis. So housing, energy, food, you know, you name it, is laid out there. And it's just like, I call it the proxy for inflation in a sense. It's just this composite that's put together. But the funny part is, and this is a 12-month change, and every month they come up with this new list, if you want to call it that. But the funny part is the 12-month change, and it's based on price, is auto insurance is up 22.2%.
Mm.
So it's actually over a 12-month span, auto insurance premiums, if you want to call it that, have increased by 22.2%, which you go, why?
Yeah, why?
What does that have to do with inflation, and how does it correlate to inflation? And I can't answer that question, honestly. And the funny part is, here's the flip. This is the reverse, which says the decrease, so a year ago today, it is 8.8% cheaper to rent a car. So those are the two divides. So you have to insure that car, it costs you 22% more. But to actually go rent a car, it's almost 9% cheaper this year.
Now, restaurants are up. Rent is up. Why would auto insurance just have gone? I mean, 22% is not just your cost of doing business.
Yeah, it's an anomaly. I can't answer that question. Nobody can right now. Until somebody actually sits and you know, kind of digs through it and figures out why.
Yeah.
So this is just auto insurance. So it's not, you know, some people would say, oh, well, you know, it's if you're insuring a house in Florida or, you know, it's they don't really segregate that out. They're just saying it's auto insurance.
Interesting. And I always wonder, this is my theory, Jeff. This is not the reigning theory of Keep What's Yours or Capital Advisory Group. This is my theory. Cost is going up because they can. Because they can charge you more. You don't seem to be, you know, balking at the price of auto. No one can drop auto insurance. You know, got to drive to work. So they can squeeze you even more. And there's a couple of stories out there of, did you see that OnStar story that was kind of feeding data to insurance companies of how fast you go and how often you slam on your brakes? You know, maybe that's why insurance is going up, because they found out how terrible of drivers we actually are.
We are, exactly.
maybe that's it. But the consumer price index numbers are up, which means no rate drop now. Will we see anything by the end of the year?
Yeah, it's a possibility if the numbers turn and inflation comes back down. But it goes back to the mantra of what the Fed has always said or have been saying for a while, which is higher for longer. Which basically means a little bit higher interest rates for a longer period of time to help knock down inflation, and we won't fix it right away.
Yeah, and pulling the trigger too quickly on interest rate cuts, that's just going to bring inflation back much more, and that's what we're trying to curb in the first place. So what's the going theory? A little pain now, and we'll be good to go here and, you know, a little bit further down the road.
Exactly. And you know, again, you put the faith and the trust within the Fed that they can, and I say, manipulate the economy the way that it needs to be done to keep us on track. and we don't overheat, and our cool off too fast, one or the other.
Well, nobody likes having to go buy a house right now, and nobody really likes if they got laid off at work because the rates are up. But looking back over the course of the last 2 years or so, Jeff, have the Feds been able to tamp down inflation?
They have. They've brought it down. But again, if you look at this, even going a couple of years down the road, there's stuff that is, I'll say, items that are 20% higher than what they were 4 years ago. Mm. And that's the thing that the CPI is not taking into consideration. It is actually basically a year-over-year calculation. But what about where were we 4 years ago versus today? And yes, inflation is always out there. But if you really look at it, some of this stuff is getting, I'll say, a little scary in a sense, just because you have items that are up, 15, 18, 20% over the last 4 or 5 years. And the question is, was that really COVID? Did it really, supply chain issues and everything that took place through COVID? And does it take 6, 8, 10 years for us to unravel from that? Nobody really knows because we've never been down that path.
Right.
Before.
Brave new world. And I bet economists and historians have, 2020 marked on their calendar to say, well, 10 years from now, we're going to look back and try to figure out exactly what the heck happened. Because just 22% increase in auto insurance this year from last year, that's pretty wild and, unprecedented just about in any market that you look at. But, Jeff, that'll be saved for another time. And,
yeah.
We'll call the historians and the economists 10 years from now and say, hey, what happened? And we'll do a show just based solely on that. So to 10 years from now, Jeff and Josh, we can't wait for the show. But as far as today's Jeff and Josh goes, Jeff, thank you for doing my taxes. Thank you for doing all the taxes of everybody at Capital Advisory Group. And if you want Jeff to do your taxes next year and look at your taxes going forward, make sure that maybe you pay less. Maybe you keep more of what's yours. Jeff can do that for you. 636-394-5524 is the phone number. CapitalAdvisoryGRP.com is the website. Jeff, thanks so much for doing my taxes.
You betcha. Thank you.
And good luck.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Keep What's Yours with Josh Gilbert and Jeff Zupol, Senior Tax Strategist and Wealth Manager at Capital Advisory Group. To learn more, call 636-394-5524 or visit CapitalAdvisoryGRP.com. The views and opinions expressed in the preceding paid pre-recorded program are those of the host, callers, and guests, and do not necessarily reflect the views or positions of this station, its management, or owners.